like a snake calling on a phone. I've got no time to be alone. Summer coming at me all the time. You better think I lose my mind, 'cause I'm stranded on my own. Stranded far from home. All right,
and we're back with Stranded, the Australian-Canadian music show, for another week. Thanks so much to the news crew. Always awesome to hear, like, live. They're right here, live, chatting, talking about what's important at the moment. And music is always important. Rock and roll is always important. And I wanted to start the show with some Canadian tracks. In particular, a band called The Jolts. I just tried to play... They're a local band from Vancouver, and I tried to play one of their tracks a week or two back, just before the sports crew came in, and it got cut out partway through, so I really wanted to play at least a couple of tracks by The Jolts, because they're one of the best rock and roll bands here in the city of Vancouver. And this show is broadcast from UBC, University of British Columbia, in Vancouver. And I'm playing the Canadian tracks first because, very exciting, at 6:30 is part four, finally, of the Stranded special on the church. Regular listeners will know of my fascination with this band that just keeps getting better and better after three decades of making music together. And in recent past, we recorded three interviews with Steve Kilby, Marty Wilson-Piper, and Peter Coppers. And this week I managed to chat with Tim Powles, the drummer, who is he's got a lot of very interesting things to say. He's a record producer too, so has a very nuanced understanding of music, the production of music, and a great big picture view. And we're going to hear a lot of that big picture stuff coming up for a full hour, 6:30 special on Tim Powles, the drummer from The Church. So anyway, let's start off with The Jolts here from Vancouver with some rock and roll. And so 6:30, keep your ears peeled for The Church special, part four.
Bloodlust. Experts are now telling us that it's a minimum of 10% of American youth that are involved in the dabbler category of Satanism.
Good magazine article.
Discorder is that magazine published by CITR 101.9 FM. In it, you'll find reviews of concerts and albums, stories about bands and artists, comics, and more, including a comprehensive guide to CITR's programming.
In the October issue of Discorder, you can read up on great bands like Aunts and Uncles, Ghost House, and Yukon Blonde, cruise the oral history of Mint Records, and enjoy the fabulous cover story of Shimmering Stars. And don't miss the contributors' meeting September 29th at 6 p.m. in the CITR Lounge. Come one, come all.
Discorder is available all over the fine city of Vancouver. For a complete list of distribution locations, why not go online to discorder.ca. Become a friend of CITR and get great discounts in the Main Street area at
Antisocial Skateboard Shop, Devil May Wear, Flaming Angels Boutique, Lucky's Comics, Neptune Records, Red Cat Records, the Regional Assembly of Text, RX Comics, Temple of the Modern Girl, and the Wallflower Modern Diner.
It pays to be a friend of CITR. To learn more, come visit us in room 233 of the sub on UBC campus or check us out online at citr.ca.
And this is Stranded, the Australian-Canadian Music Show with your host, Matt. And this, of course, is broadcast from the UBC campus. And Canadian music up front, three tracks there from The Jolts, some straight-ahead rock and roll. They're one of the best rock bands here in the city. And the album is called 8%. It's their latest full-length, and it's here on the playlist in the station. Really, they love their Swedish rock and roll, really inspired by that good sound that's come out of Sweden. Definitely worth listening to. I haven't seen them live yet, but it's definitely something that I'm keen to make some time for. The Jolts from Vancouver. Now, tonight, if you're listening live, you'd be able to go see a gentleman named David Francie play at the Rogue Folk Club. To be honest, I've just fallen in love with David Francie's music. When I discovered him a few years back, I think he's just one of the most extraordinary songwriters I've heard come out of Canada. He's a folk artist with Scottish roots. He was actually born in Ayrshire in Scotland in 1954, but his family moved to Canada when he was 12. And he's such a genuine folk artist, writing about real life, because he spent many years of his life doing labor, such as carpentry, and began a career in folk music later on, and quickly made a name for himself on the folk circuit. And he's just gone from strength to strength, and his songs are just extraordinarily moving. And I'm hoping to get down there tonight if I can squeeze the time in to see him live. So I'm going to play you a brand new track from him, from his latest album. It's called Yesterday's News. And I'll see if I can find a bit of older stuff too to squeeze in before the church special part four. So this is David Francie, folk singer.
Yesterday's news feeds a fire in the morning, as smoke and ashes enter the blue. Yesterday's news owes nothing to tomorrow, means nothing at this moment, means nothing to you. All was said and done, it was all but over, but over and over. There was nothing to do. And black and white on a front page headline, a moment of real time, all lucid and true. Wonder why anything matters. Get up and get at it. Well, for what or for who? Run for cover to someone or other, a lover or mother, or one of the two. Yesterday's news owes nothing to tomorrow, means nothing at this moment, means nothing to you. The late edition, a mercy mission by the chosen few. Too late for page one tomorrow, some other sorrow will have to do. Yesterday's news feeds the fire in the morning, as smoke and ashes enter the blue. Yesterday's news owes nothing to tomorrow, means nothing at this moment,
means nothing to you. Summer day, and my love and I went walking over hills and fields. We walked laughing and talking. Came across an old farmhouse standing broken and bare. It used to be someone's home, now no one lives there. And there's a red barn standing held together with nails and dust. And a tired old massy harness, all wires and rust. Weeds overgrown in a garden sown with care. It used to be someone's home, now no one lives there. And through the crack in the window pane, I hear the sound of the falling rain. Another farm being left run down. Another family moved into town. Had a life that they tried to save, but the banks took it all away. And the sign on the torn screen door, nobody lives here no more. They want their fingers to the bone, nothing left they can call their own. Packed it in under leaden skies, with just the wheat waving them goodbye. Had a life that they tried to save, but the banks took it all away. Hung a sign on a torn screen door, nobody lives here no more. Had a life that they tried to save, but the banks took it all away. Hung a sign on a torn screen door, nobody lives here no more.
Wish Media Awareness a happy birthday. The 10th anniversary of Media Democracy Days Vancouver will run from November 11th to 13th. Media Democracy Days Vancouver will bring you free panel discussions, production workshops, and film screenings that will have you questioning the Canadian media landscape. All events are free to the public, but seating is limited and registration is encouraged. Complete programming details are available online at www.mediademocracydays.org.
Yay! This is Stranded, the Australian-Canadian Music Show, and it's close to the time that I'll be playing the part four of the Church Special. But you just heard three extraordinary songs from an extraordinary songwriter there, Canadian-based folk artist David Francy. He is going to be playing tonight in Vancouver, if you're here listening live, at the Rogue Folk Club. And he is one of my personal favourites of the folk musicians I've heard in Canada. He writes some very touching songs based on his working class roots, a very genuine folk singer, and I would really like to go and see him tonight. I'm going to do my best to get there. So that's David Francy. And the last two songs there were Red Winged Blackbird and Torn Screen Door, two older songs. So we've got the Church Special coming up very soon, part four, where I speak with drummer Tim Powell. So to get us in the mood, let's hear track two from the latest Church album, Untitled Number 23. It was a single called Dead Man's Hand. Listen up, we've got a full 1 hour to come up with Tim Powell from the Church.
Dealing out the dead man's hand. got my hand on my heart. I got my heart on my mind.
We drifted apart.
I gotta jump on the clock. I gotta find me some time. Put your hands round my throat. You got your voice in my head.
No matter what,
you better jump on the clock. You better watch where you tread. Rationales. They had their streets.
Okay, we're back here on Stranded, and it's time for part four of the church special with Tim Powles, the drummer from the band. A full 1 hour special, including a 3-part interview. In the background, you can hear Pangaea by the Church off their latest album, Untitled Number 23. So, hope you enjoy the next hour of the show.
Terrific.
You always wanted his character to be bigger than life.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is without question the greatest sports and entertainment event of all time. Be a part of it Monday
from 1 to 3 p.m.
The Parts Unknown Show on 101.9 CITR. Sometimes cosmoses collide.
Parts Unknown!
Fingers.
And welcome to part four of the Stranded, the Australian Canadian Music Show special on The Church, the extraordinary band from Australia that is 3 decades into their career and who recently have released album number 23 to critical acclaim, followed by extensive tours of North America and Australia. In weeks past, I've broadcast interviews with bassist and lyricist Steve Kilby, and guitarist Marty Wilson Piper and Peter Coppers. This week, to conclude the series, is a special interview with drummer Tim Powles. I was fortunate to meet Tim backstage in Seattle last year at the Church show, and I was blown away with the energy of Tim Powles and how much he had to say about music and his enthusiasm for the band. and you'll really have a treat ahead of you with a three-part interview, a chat I had with Tim on the phone. But to start with, let's play a couple of tracks from the Hologram of Baal album by The Church.
Thank you. CanZine West presents the Zine Fair and Festival of Alternative Culture. CanZine is an opportunity for creators and admirers of indie culture to meet, swap stories, and share their wares. This event will take place on November 13th at the Ukrainian Hall in Strathcona. All Vancouverites are invited to participate in this cultural exchange. For more information about the Zine Fair and Festival of Alternative Culture, contact CanZine West at brokenpencil.com. This event is sponsored by CITR.
You just heard there two tracks from the Church album Hologram of Baal from 1998. You heard the tracks No Certainty Attached and Another Earth. And I played those two tracks because 1998 and the Hologram of Baal album marked the period in time where Tim Powers became an official member of the band The Church as a drummer. He did initially play on an earlier record, 1994, the Sometime Anywhere album, but it was already sort of partly complete, and it wasn't until 1998 that Tim really joined the band solid. We're going to be hearing a three-part interview with Tim Powers right now over the next hour. So to start with, let's hear Tim talking a little bit about what the Church has been up to in the past years and how he joined the Church and what he believes his influence has been on their music.
I guess since I joined the band, we've really been, which is, you know, like Yonks, nearly 20 years ago now, so it's like, we've been sort of out in the underground wilderness a little bit, doing what we want to do, and then sort of on the slow journey back to sort of crossing, or we're just sort of going along our own road, and then somebody sort of along the way, you know, destiny, fate, flipped the switch in the railway track, and we sort of crossed over the mainstream path a wee bit over the last couple of years. Probably as a result of definitely as a result of just sticking to what we do, carrying on regardless, no real choice in the matter, making a lot of music, and so very high output, very prolific, and, you know, good quality releases, and also just changing all the time, reinventing for all sorts of different reasons, some of them by design, some of them by accident. And then, you know, the industry and the music, music as an art form and as a retail form, and music and its various media forms have just been so completely turned on their heads by the advances of technology and the internet, and all that stuff over the last 4 or 5 years, that we have sailed out into this land where people are running for cover and reinventing and trying to work out new business models, and we've just sort of had our own self-contained thing, and suddenly we're sort of paddling our little boat, but all these sort of big steamers are sinking around us, and we just keep paddling, and all the people watching the race on the side suddenly can see our little boat a bit better, and now we get a few more cheers and claps, and spurred on, we're paddling faster. And
And I know that you joined the band roughly around 1994, and I'm wondering how that first came about, and what you think your unique input to the band has been to shift the direction in the years since.
Yeah, I kind of came in. I came into the band was down to a two-piece, and Steve and Marty didn't have a drummer, and they had a friend of Russell Kilby's playing, Stephen's brother, and Russell was involved in recording, and because there was a studio in Sydney and a terrace there in Surrey Hills, and they were working with Dara Mason, and who's a friend of Marty's as a producer, and they were getting some drums down. They weren't really that happy. They had a lot of loops and clicks, so the record was pretty much, you know, I don't know, 60, 70, 80% of the record was recorded. But they needed a drummer to play on top of it and make it kind of work out. And I knew everybody, and I knew everyone before that, and I'd been in a band that had sort of done shows at the church on and off, even though a bit miscast, and I mean, they knew that I was a worthy player on my instrument. Just, you know, kind of person I am, very patient and a good catalyst for things, and very broad-minded, but with a very keen sense of reinvention, and quite also adamant that I don't want to be a facsimile of anything. So I, in that, I kind of have always pushed the band to not be a facsimile of anything it just did. And whenever we're doing something and it reminds me of stuff that we've done already, I tend to sort of push away all the time.
Hmm.
So that combined with the sense that sometimes the other guys are the opposite. Everyone has their different hats on. Sometimes it's good to have a style, and we do. But I think our style's not defined by necessarily what we've done. It's defined by just the four people. So you really do have a quintessential rock band like they used to be, where almost the limitations of us as people and players are the things that define it. Every time we actually go to play, we might all be stretching ourselves like crazy, but from the outside, it just sounds like the church.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah, and that sensibility, of course, of constant reinvention and thinking broadly, you bring to your production work with Space Junk, which is your production company you have there in Sydney. I wonder if you could tell me a little bit about how all that came about and what your day-to-day work is with Space Junk.
Because I'm a Kiwi New Zealander, I guess I certainly used to suffer from a sort of a lack of when you grow up in a place like New Zealand, you feel a bit out of the loop because you're in this tiny space. So everyone tries harder to be in the loop. Mm. So in a bizarre way, there's a false sense of being trendy and being up with everything. And so I grew up musically in a bit of that, and was kind of fixated there with after the 70s rock thing. And I left school, moved on briefly to university, and was playing in bands in New Zealand. I was really drawn into sort of more obtuse new wave stuff like Magazine and XTC, who are really a jazz band in a way when you think about it, and Ultravox, early Ultravox with John Fox, and all that. There's a sort of a sense of something, there was some machine-like stuff going on there. And that's still very much a big part of my makeup. When I arrived over here, it was kind of weird because I encountered this whole Oz rock, Australian rock thing, which was just different again.
Mm.
Trying to find myself in the middle of all that was hard. And I started, I'd been working my audio skills. I've been always interested in audio and just naturally picked everything up and understood how everything worked. And I saw signal path, and I saw, you know, the way things, buttons go and tape machines work, and music flows in sort of linear word pictures. And I had sound pictures in my head. When I saw microphones, I saw images of how they sounded. I built that, and sitting at the back of bands, lots of different bands, you tend to slowly just amass this incredible sense of big picture, the big picture of everything. And you can get in your small picture, but you can have this big picture. And so when I was engineering, I started engineering more with the bands I was in, and then I just started doing work outside of that. And because I came up with tape machines and worked with some incredible overseas producers in bands before the church, I just absorbed it all and learned it all and took it on with me. And takes a lot of patience, takes a lot of people skills, takes a lot of being forceful when required.
Hmm.
That's really, I think, what's enabled me to sort of drop some incredible results here with artists and records that don't sound so sort of local, I suppose.
That's right. And
took a train.
Really make you mine. done. You come yet still remain, and you take a little fun. Return to Adam's Bay.
And we're back on Stranded, the Australian Canadian Music Show. And don't forget that you can go to the show blog by typing into Google, OZSTRANDED, to receive a full set list, podcast, and a video clip each week. So this week we're talking with Tim Powell's drummer of The Church, because this is part four of The Church special here on the show. And we just heard two tracks there. The first track was actually an instrumental track featuring the work of Tim Powell's. Of course, Tim is a multi-talented musician and producer, and he's recently collaborated with a band called Hammock, who are quite an ambient band. And you heard an instrumental track there from Hammock, from a recent EP, and that collaboration also includes Steve Kilby actually doing vocals on one of the tracks. It is from a digital-only EP release of From Outtakes of the fourth LP by Hammock called Chasing the Shadows, and the track with Tim Powell's is called Verse for Forgiveness. And you also heard there a track from the latest Church album, album number 23. The track was called Happenstance. So let's press on with part two of my interview with Tim Powell, drummer of the Church. And in this section, I asked him to respond to a quote from Brian Eno about music production. And Tim actually put this quote up on his website. And I was interested in if he could expand and comment on what Brian Eno had to say. I wanted to actually read out for you and see what if you could add and comment on the quote from Brian Eno that you put up on your Space Junk site. I'm going to read it word for word for the listeners because it's sort of along the lines of what you're talking about. It says, what's different is that 1978 was the era of musicians, while now is the era of producers. Like the 18th and 19th century was about those who understood the great innovation of that time, the orchestra. Today's great innovation is the studio, the recording process, and that every piece of music, apart from being a sonic pleasure, is an experiment in social organization. There is a morality there. A producer tries to make the social unit work, and so the music you make is a statement of belief about how society could work. It's brilliant, and I can see why you put it up there. And I wondered if you might comment further on that quote from Brian Eno?
Well, I mean, just hearing it again, and I haven't read it for a couple of months, but it's the thing that sort of jumps to my mind straight away is that someone said to me, you know, what do you do? I think it was even might have been a parent at my daughter's school. What do you do with your life? What do you do? And I'm a musician, I'm a producer. And then I was sitting there and I sort of went, you know what I do? I make decisions. That's all I do.
Yeah.
And I thought, every single thing I do, other than when I'm intuitively and mindlessly playing an instrument, which often happens with the Church, it's just all very intuitive and responsive. And I do drum sessions like that a lot for people as well. But everything else, you're basically making a decision, whether it is, do I just quite simply do this guitar part now, or do I wait till the other guy comes because he's going to have some input? To do I use that microphone or do I walk to the mic cupboard and get the other one? To should we break for lunch because the guys are really tired? To should I do that job because that person doesn't quite know what they're doing and I'm going to have to put a whole lot into that? To, you know, should I take Sunday off or should I work it again this week when I'm trying to have weekends off? To shall I use this plugin or shall I do the plugins later? Shall I use the tape machine? And then telling people constantly what they have to do. And particularly with younger bands, I'm finding that the parenting aspect of being a producer is just like massive. And it's developed even more because the dynamic in the studio, which I don't think Eno knew at the time, that's changed is that, and this is that comes back to the social bit, it comes back to the social relationship of young people has changed massively because of technology. The social media has changed the interpersonal relationships of the musicians in the band and between themselves and also how they relate to the outside world. So as a band, they can sit somewhere in their tour van and go, hey, we just did that, whack that up on YouTube, bang, it's out there, it's instant, it's gone. But then internally, when they're all sitting in the studio, because they often get absorbed into their own laptops or iPhones and they go to their own spaces, often the collective energy that used to exist where people were sitting there and they didn't have a screen to look at, but they just had speakers to listen to, that energy is different now. And I find that it's not always a good thing.
Yeah.
It has to be refocused in a different way.
Yeah, energy to contain that. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I've kind of, I go through spates of going, okay, net's off. Everybody's headspaces are here and only here. Not looking for examples of what we're doing externally. Look for them inside, look in your imagination. you know, let's go within instead of outside, and no more instant gratification.
Mm.
You are feeding off your environment all the time, and every single thing you output is a reaction to it. It's a reaction to your day, your emotions, and your output, and what you sense, the sounds of the city on your way there, the things that you hear, and that backdrop is what you create into all the time, and it changes all over the world, and it changes night into day, and if you can be kind of aware of it in a way, it's a really amazing thing.
That's right. We wouldn't have had the Stooges if Iggy Pop wasn't walking around Detroit and listening to the industrial sounds of the city, things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that's a very easy to understand example.
Mm.
But then the more obtuse example is just simply, you know, not seeing anything that direct.
Mm.
Just wherever you live, your surroundings and whatever happened to you the day before, environmental and accidental and I don't know what the other word for it is, but it's those things give you they're going into your core all the time, and it comes out in your reaction to them. And I find at the moment that I sense that a lot of it's harder for those things to be reflected out through to people and actually have as much and make as much of a statement. And I don't see it as necessarily negative. I'm just commenting and saying it's definitely different.
Yeah.
And I don't think, like, I like jelly beans, and if I'm on a highway driving somewhere, I'll stop and have some fries, but that's not my favorite. It's not my favorite meal. And I, at the moment, there's just we're in this really transitory stage while people they try and work out how to avoid being bombarded with everything that's out there. Can you kind of insulate yourself so you can react to the environment instead of actually being constantly projecting yourself out particularly into the virtual environment, which is, it's so dangerous, because you can find an example of yourself out there doing what you're doing anywhere, and it's kind of, in a way, you don't want to sort of know that.
Yeah.
And I think there's too many people listening and going, hey, they've done that. Hey, everyone does that. That's naturally, that's a natural thing. And there's famous stories about, you know, the Beatles hearing the Stones and the Stones hearing the Beatles, and British artists hearing American artists and being influenced, and vice versa. And, hey, we're going to do our version of that, and you're going to do your version. So, but back then, the time that it took to articulate those changes and the way it was done was all happening on a different scale. Whereas now it's just instant. It's seconds.
Across the pale blue sky, I wake up tired and feeling sore. It's the buzzing of bees, the buzzing of bees. I raise my collar to keep out the cold that's tickling round my ears, coughing and sighing, breathing and crying. The buzzing of bees, the buzzing of bees.
buzzing of bees. Another long night of anxious dreams is keeping me awake at night. Tossing and turning, spinning and whirring, the buzzing of bees, the buzzing of bees. We limp our way through this life and dream of something better. Brush these stars out of my eyes, they've blinded my clear sight. Wipe away these tiresome tears, it's the buzzing of bees, the buzzing of bees. It's the buzzing of bees, the buzzing of bees. The buzzing of bees, the buzzing of bees.
The ocean floor.
I'm sending my best down the way with the kindest of regards from distant facades based on most recent remarks.
Listen, if they're so hot, how come they're not tearing up the charts, babe?
Because you never play them, babe.
At CITR, our hosts choose the music they play. That means our charts actually reflect the tastes of music lovers, as opposed to focus groups. So if you want to know what's really tearing up the charts, get your hands on a copy of Beatroot or Discorder magazine, or go online to CITR.ca. CITR's charts are based on actual spins motivated by actual preference. No payola, no marketing, just good tunes. Refreshing, no?
And this is Stranded, the Australian-Canadian Music Show, and the Tim Powell special on Stranded. Tim Powell, of course, is the drummer from The Church, and this is part 4 of the special on The Church that this show has been running through.
So Tim Powles, also known as Tim E. Bandit, his nickname Tim, capital E. On the website for his bio on the church, it says, Tim Powles bends time, moves time, keeps time, and has kept the church in time since 1994. And it's been amazing hearing him speak here in the exclusive interview. The two artists we heard just then were musicians that Tim has produced. We've heard a lot about Tim talking about the music production that he does and his ideas around that. And he records an eclectic range of musicians, including Mark Muldrow. You heard a track called The Buzzing of Bees from his album. And in contrast to that folk music, we heard a band called A Street-Like Song from their EP The Ocean Floor. We heard a couple of tracks from them, first Death Charge, and then track two, which is called The Lighthouse. So some good examples there of the music that Tim Powles has been producing of late. So let's get into the final part of the interview with Tim, where he responds further to the quote from Brian Eno and provides his own reflections again about the state of music and his role as a mentor for folks.
The other thing Eno said, which I thought was brilliant, was the gist of what he said was, in the history books, in hundreds of years to come, when they look back at the history of the story of contemporary music, and they look at the end of last century into this century, they'll go, there was an odd little period in time when a few people made a completely disproportionate amount of money out of this music.
Mm.
Were paid a fortune and all became celebrities, and there was a bump there, and then it settled down and it became an art form like every other art form. And I just totally agree with that, as much as it might seem pessimistic to some people in the business who are used to making a lot of money out of it. I just think that it's gone.
And yeah, it looks like, I mean, for all the challenges now and the uncertainty, that discernment and integrity may come back and really, yeah, make the difference. And you're in a very good position to be a mentor for folks. So
that's pretty much what my life's become, actually. I'm surrounded by, I look at the, currently, I'm working with an incredibly eclectic group of artists that's so different. They're all really young, it's just, I just find that I'm, in every single action, I'm just passing on everything that I've learned, hoping that something from that goes in and helps. I mean, I know that it does in the music, because there's a reason why people want to make records with me. It's because there's something that I've been lucky enough to tap into in myself that goes through, that gives things a depth, gives it a quality.
Mm.
And it is a mentoring kind of a thing. And I just feel sad that a lot of people don't get the opportunity. They don't get to discover what record making, which isn't even a term you should really use, because I joked the other day, last night, we'd been in this band called Regular John that I've been working with on their second album. It's very heavy music. It's heavy personality-wise. And the joke was, you know, at a moment of tension in there, I just sort of said, gee, it's hard work today making these MP3s, isn't it? And it was sort of like, if you saw the situation in the studio, it was just a massive setup. I don't think I've ever had as big a collection of guitars, amps, vintage keyboards, the guys just between them all, and between some of the stuff I've got here, it's so crammed in the studio at the moment. It's crazy. But just the bizarre, the simplicity of that statement, when you were just in the intense, the time, energy, standing in all that gear, the interpersonal relationships at the time with all the people, and having been worked on one song over and over, and we were on to like take eight, and we were working on the tape machine, and there was a lot of more to the process than the bands are used to, because there's rewinding, and then we're dropping those takes into the computer. So it was very, very, really dense, really intense. And that simple statement of, gee, it's hard making MP3s today. It's that destination seems so just kind of almost I mean, we just all burst out laughing because it seemed like such a tiny little odd thing to be doing.
Yeah.
And it just sort of used to feel so much more emotionally worthwhile as a journey when you had in your head this sort of piece of vinyl. And then we adapted it to the CD, and then we made the mistake of thinking that albums should have 18 tracks on them because you can get them all on the CD, which I'm not a huge fan on. And then we slowly all got used to the fact that it can be an MP3 if it's high enough quality. And as technology pushes our daily lives up into this ridiculous pace that humans are not designed to do in terms of how fast we're expected to react, how fast we're expected to earn money, all that stuff, we just give in and go, okay, I want to listen to my music, I'll just listen to it on my player and my cans, I'll listen in the car, it is MP3s.
Yeah.
I remember 4 years ago when I was really horrified at the gap in how the music sounded. Now I'm just moving forward. And so you become caught in it. And if you rail against it, there's a part of you that goes, oh, am I old hat? What's wrong with trying to hold on to this? Hang on a minute. No, I'm not old hat.
Yeah.
There's something that we've sadly got used to. We've taken this advantage of technology, and what was given away is a feeling of ownership and the thing that's so good about having real physical value on things. I'm really hoping that somehow in some kind of revolution comes back so it becomes more a part of people's lives and people can actually be in love with their art more and other people's art more.
Well, I think there's going to be enough purists who are going to get together and make that happen. I'm sure of it. And it's been really great to hear your perspective and the mentorship, the role that you see yourself in.
I'm Peter Mansbridge, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
And that concludes the four-part special on the church. This week was Tim Powell's. You just heard the last part of my interview with Tim. I really hope you enjoyed a lot of the big picture perspective that Tim brought to the world of music. It was really wonderful to chat with him and to play this interview for you. So I hope you enjoyed everything. And one last track now. We're going to play for you a track called Luna, from the album number 23 by The Church, the latest album. I hope you enjoy this. I hope you enjoyed the show. Don't forget to go to Google and type in OZSTRANDED to find a podcast of this show and to access all other shows. Bye for now.